Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Almost halfway through 2020, where is TV at? Our opening hour will explore that question and figure what directions the medium goes from July to December and beyond. Our roundtable begins when Mark Berman of The Prominent Insider and MediaDose columnist Charlene Weiser join me next here in New York. Yet other ventures on board the Smart TV Content Concord, Omnia Media. Senior Vice President and General Manager Greg Campanis pilots their course at the top of our second hour. Also ahead, new front news notes from Hulu and elsewhere, Netflix gets Cobra Kai, our classic trivia question, and Mea Culpa time. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, Simon Casting Live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A great day after Father's Day and start of summer to all of you, and welcome once again to the program about TV's current and future state. 87 big, sunny, humid degrees here in New York at the top of the hour. We have a wonderful 90-minute and change show for you, and we invite you to not be part of it, but be interactive with it. All you got to do is pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room going. It's ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Speaker TuneIn screen. Follow the instruction other people can be live with you. Mark Berman, Charlene Weiser, get our roundtable underway here in New York after this first round of news notes. Day one of the annual Digital Content New Fronts, going on all week virtually through the Interactive Advertising Bureau, featured new series announcements from Hulu and Crackle. Hulu's set of movies include Woke, a hybrid live-action animated satire of an African American's cartoonist adventures coming this fall, and Only Murders in the Building from This Is Us creator Dan Fogelberg, teaming Steve Martin and Martin Short. Crackle's new series roster includes scripted drama Spikes, which is out this fall, also a new series starring the return of Craig T. Nelson to series television, and unscripted magazine Sports Confidential. News Notes 2020, or I should say New Fronts 2020, resume tomorrow afternoon at noon Eastern Time. And Netflix has won the competition to be Cobra Kai's new destination. After 2 seasons on YouTube, which has exited the scripted universe, Kai will have its 3rd season on Netflix, premiere date to be disclosed later. Netflix will replay the 1st 2 seasons later this fall. We'll have a bunch of news note cookies for you near the bottom of the hour. But right now it's time to introduce our roundtable discussing where TV is at almost halfway through this year. First up, my MediaDose colleague who covers a library of topics there. It's a pleasure to welcome this program, Charlene Weiser. Hi, Charlene.
Hi, Simon. Thank you for inviting me.
It is a pleasure. And one of our favorite people is also joining us. He is Mr. Plumbing Insider. That's the popular email newsletter service and also a wonderful website of the same name, our good friend Mark Berman. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Simon. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. Charlene, we'll start with you. What do you say is the big story halfway through 2020 in television?
Oh, my. Well, I would say from everything that I've seen, the biggest story is the sense of unknown as to where the second half is going. Will there be a second wave? Will consumers regain their confidence? How will that impact advertisers? In the past 6 months, there have been accelerating recent trends, expanded use of screens, more co-viewing, family viewing, comfort viewing, but also an increase in the interest in news, probably because of the political environment and the election coming up. If I had to encapsulate it, it would be we've seen a lot of changes in the past 6 months in terms of increased uses and expansion of screens, but the next 6 months is uncertain.
Mark, same labeling for you?
Yes, without a doubt, I have to totally agree with what Charlene said. You know, look, we're in a world of unknown now. We don't really know what's going to happen. Anything could happen. And, you know, what's interesting is the broadcast networks finally, late last week, we finally learned what the 5 broadcast networks will be doing. But the question is, when will they be starting the fall TV season in the fall? Will it start in September? And then what's interesting, the obvious observation is, if you look at what the broadcast networks were announced last year at this time, or really in May of 2019, there were 17 new fall television series. There was 36 new shows scheduled for this season. We only have 8 new fall TV shows. We only have, you know, a handful of others coming up in mid-season, so it's very quiet. And what the networks are doing and what everyone's doing is they're kind of using content from other sources to fill the schedule. So my prediction is I don't imagine the fall television season will start the third week of September. I just don't see that happening. And I think it's going to be a very slow rollout. So it really is, the word is unknown.
You know, it seems to both of you that while everybody, the broadcast networks have announced their fall, and in case of CW, maybe a second fall schedule, winter schedule, nobody is, and everybody's on pins and needles as to when the shows are going to get produced. We know that some shows are now back in production in California, but we have yet to hear from Mayor de Blasio in New York and Governor Cuomo of New York when TV production is going to come back to the Big Apple, because when the coronavirus pandemic started, there were 70 to 75 TV shows, scripted TV shows, that were in production here in New York. The pilots weren't made, and we, again, we don't know when TV production is going to come back to the Big Apple.
Yes,
no,
that's a very
I mean,
important point, because that affects timing.
Exactly. We don't know. I mean, it really is. There's no way to predict this because we just unfortunately do not know. Hopefully, we will continue to see a decrease in the coronavirus cases and things will get back to more of a normalcy. But who's to say? And it just I just don't see anything starting on time. And then the other big question is, what about sports? What about live sports? You know, NBC announced the schedule with Sunday Night Football. Will we have Sunday Night Football? We don't know. I mean, nobody knows for sure what's going to happen, so it's just who knows.
And Mark, to your point about sports, I think that will depress ratings because football brings in a lot of viewers. And without certain sports, we could see a depression in ratings in the fall.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, it's interesting, as I'm sure you know, when you look back in you know, recent years, if you do a tracking, the one constant, the one element of our business that is as strong as ever is live sports. Mm-hmm. And without it, you know, everybody is heavily dependent on it. So without it, you know, things are going to become depressed. And then, of course, the issue is, you know, the longer this takes, the less original product we'll have, and that includes the streamers. I mean, right now, the go-to place is Netflix. But at some point, it's going to start slowing down because we're not going to have the original content. So who knows?
Right. Can I inject a little bit of optimism, though?
I think there's
a lot more flexibility in terms of lengths and formats, and I'm finding that I'm watching a lot of what I would call origination sources, going into the archives at the, for example, the Metropolitan Opera, and seeing some great programming that they have had in their library, and I can view it on my tablet or anywhere I want. So we may be seeing the resurgence of other content that we might not ordinarily be able to view.
Well, that's a good point. And, you know, I've found some very good shows. You know, my wife and I watch TV a lot together, and we're always in the hunt. You know, what can we watch now? We keep finding seasons of shows. You know, I personally wish, like when you go to a streamer, you don't get a full season. You don't get 22 episodes. You get 6 episodes, 8 episodes, 10 episodes. So you sit down, and within 2 or 3 days, you're done with it. But there's a lot of good stuff out there. There is really, if you could find a lot of good content, and there's so many different places to look for it.
Yes, so I guess optimistically, discovery would be a really positive aspect of all of this.
That's a good word. That's good.
And speaking of discovery, sort of being a little different from everybody, for me, I think the story of this first 6 months of 2020, and we're looking at away from seeing, is the smart TV set and the smart TV device is the center of activity. This is the big story at the digital content new front today. We are seeing more people watch television over their smart TV sets and smart devices, both subscription, the mega plumbing services, whether it's Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, or Netflix, Hulu, Amazon. We're seeing more smart TV services get off the ground, many from independent players, which I think has been remarkable over the last couple months. In fact, our next guest, less than an hour from now, is one of the new players that's into this smart TV device situation. And it seems that the advertising community is finally getting it, which is, this is where you got to go. It's no longer a test market. It's no longer, it is the marketplace. And get off your butt and start getting into that in that field.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and sorry, go ahead.
No, you could go. I'll wait.
No, I was just going to say, the whole concept of, you know, you have connected TV, you have immersive TV, you have other uses of the screen. There are more games that bring community together. People are meditating and exercising, Zooming, you know, all sorts of social things. So the screen will expand as it becomes smarter.
That's a very good point. You know, it's an interesting situation realistically because, you know, in this time of uncertainty, you know, normally at this time, you know, the hot levels decrease, people are outside enjoying the nice weather, the summer, and we have a lot of people consuming content, you know, that are hungry right now that, you know, right now things are slowly opening again. So, you know, we're going to start seeing a lull in terms of, you know, people watching, you know, consuming content. But it's interesting to see that there's, you know, we've got an arena of a lot of people wanting to consume stuff. And the question is, you know, where do they go? There's so many places to find it now, and it's so scattered. So in some ways, it's a very creative challenge, and there's a lot out there to consume.
And Mark, something else that was very surprising to me, one of the biggest developments of this first half was that Netflix conference call where Ted Sarando said, we are all set to go with our programming this year and for a good chunk of 2021 because – the fact that we produce stuff all around the world. We've had writers' rooms in virtual. We've had animation going on without a break. It just seems that and Netflix has had really not a second wind, but a second tornado of subscribers, and they seem to be in the best possible world right now.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, I have to really, you know, take my hat off for them if I wore a hat. There is so much content. You know, the thing about Netflix, when they got into the scene way back when, they just had unlimited pockets, and they were investing in programming everywhere. And they would find shows in different countries. And, you know, there's so many options there. And honestly, you know, with me personally, when I just finished Dead to Me on Netflix, I watched the two seasons available. When I'm done with something, my first option is let me see what Netflix has now. And they've done a wonderful job. And, of course, there's so many streamers now. There's a lot of different places to go to.
And also what I've been noticing is a lot of programs are adapting to the new production constraints. So if you're watching, you know, late night and people, you know, the hosts are broadcasting from their houses, it's lending a certain intimacy. It may be drawing in the viewers to see more of their favorite hosts and see how they really live. It's humanizing a lot of the talent out there, as well as producing new, fresh content.
Absolutely, yes. You know, it's so funny. I've watched so many different shows and thought to myself, I see where this person lives now. You know, they're sitting in their living room. But, you know, it's interesting also with you. You know, we watched one – you know, American Idol, I watched this season, and of course, you know, towards the end of the season, everything went virtual, and it was kind of, and I thought to myself, it's not going to work, but you know what, it did work, because the way they did it worked, you'd have the, you know, the contestants at home performing, it felt personal, it felt comfortable. I'm not sure how America's Got Talent's going to do it, though. That I don't know, because, you know, they have big acts. I don't know how, you know, an act of 50 singers are going to do this at home in a backyard, but I don't know.
I think, you know, you may be surprised at how creative it can become.
And I'm going to touch upon that a little. And I'm going to touch upon that a little bit more. But first, I'm going to get a quick break to let all of you know that this is Tomorrow Be Televised. We have a roundtable hour going in our first hour, talking about where TV is as we approach the halfway mark of 2020, first year of a new decade. We've got Mark Berman from the Programming Insider, a very popular website and email newsletter service, with us along with Media Notes columnist Charlene Weiser. They're both here in New York this hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Find out on the line from New York, 87 degrees. It's humid out there. Probably the most of the year so far. Happy to have you aboard. Opening day of the week. We have 3 episodes coming your way this week. You can question your comment for our guests right now. Don't be shy. Get involved. 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Wednesday on Tomorrow Be Televised, back at our regular hour of 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. We'll wrap up SiriusXM 2020 that is going on as we speak in Denver, also virtually. We set some on Friday. We will have the Chief Strategic Officer of that festival, Allison Greenberg Millis. And Friday, we'll introduce you to an entrepreneur who wants to be the Aaron Spelling, the Greg Berlanti, the Chandler Rhimes, the Ryan Murphy of Asian American television. His name is Quentin Lee. He's got a lot of irons in the fire, including a series right now on Hulu, a series on Tubi, which, by the way, had a presentation of the new funds earlier this afternoon. He's got 3 TV series in the works, and he has a website that he hopes could become the Netflix of Asian American television. It's called www.asianamericanmovies.com. Quentin Lee, live and exclusive with us, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Mark, what did you think about all these shows that went virtual? American Idol, The Voice, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, that had to go on without a studio audience because they got caught with the pandemic in terms of taping. What's your thinking about how these shows did, and also the late night shows, shows like Wendy Williams and Kelly Clarkson in daytime syndication. How do you think they all did with doing virtual from home?
You know, I really have to give a credit to all to these shows. I think they all did a very good job. You know, I mentioned American Idol. You know, when this first happened, and you know, I was watching American Idol, I thought to myself, I don't see how they're going to do this virtually. I just don't see how it's going to work, but they did do it, and it worked well. And I think, you know, these talk shows, and it feels personal. It feels like, you know, it's like more of, you know, you're getting a feeling of how they live, where they live, what it looks like. So I thought they did a very good job with it. You know, look, I missed the live element. The one thing I'll say, the one show that I was disappointed with, you know, I'm a huge fan of Survivor, and I've been watching it since the very beginning. And it was a very big season. They were giving out $2 million, and you know, they did the season finale. It was a 3-hour episode, and when the individual won the $2 million, it was like, you know, like 30 seconds and it was done. I think they could have maybe done it a little differently and maybe brought the other contestants in. But I think overall, I give a lot of outlets, a lot of shows credit for doing this, because I really feel like they stepped to the plate, they handled the challenge, and of course, as a viewer, I want to see the live element again. I want to see it go back to that, but right now it can't, and it has to be adjusted, and it's going to be very different, because eventually, even if, like, studio wanted to start coming in again, I don't imagine it's going to be a full audience. They're going to have to social distance. It's going to be different, but as it stands, I think they did a good job overall. I do.
Yeah. Charlene, we now have this era of mega programming services underway. I'm talking about Disney Plus, BET Plus, Apple TV Plus, HBO Max is now a month in, Peacock is on Comcast cable systems, goes on smart TV sets and all over the place next month. What's your feeling about this era that has started with all these programming services? What do you make of them?
Well, you know, I think they're all very exciting, and I think they give the consumer a wide choice of content. The researcher in me gets a little nervous because these are siloed services, and I wonder how all the data will be collected and how we'll be able to measure all of these. There are still a lot of walled gardens in terms of data, and these will be creating more data sets. So I think for the viewer, a great opportunity to see a lot more content for the industry and sales and marketing, maybe a challenge with collecting the data.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I want to welcome Rick Webb from Philadelphia and bring up Boogie into our chat room. So if you have some questions or thoughts, put them in the room. Make the call, 646-652-2906. Nice to have both of you aboard. What do you think, Mark, about this era of new mega services? How does it impress you?
Well, you know, the one immediate observation is there's so many places to go for content. There's so many choices. There's so much out there. And you have to ask yourself, when will enough be enough already? I mean, at some point, it's got to cap out. You know, it kind of reminds me back, you know, way back when cable really came to play. And then it seemed like every week we had a new cable network. And it was just, you know, this network did this, and this one did that, and this one did this. And I remember back then, a lot of people had predicted it would be the end of network television. Well, that did not happen, and that's not going to happen now. But I like the fact that there is a lot of choice. I think the outlets have to do it the right way. They have to put on the type of shows that viewers are going to find, because to find shows in today's environment is not an easy thing to do. So if you're an outlet like a Netflix right now, that's the go-to store. You know, like I remember with the cable network, you had like HBO became a go-to source, and then FX and Showtime and other outlets. And I think if you're, you know, one of the streamers, you have to really find the shows, the content that viewers want to consume, and you can do it. It's not impossible, because there is a lot of good content out there. There really is. As I said earlier, you know, during, you know, this current situation, it's been a scavenger hunt. And I've never come up empty-handed. I've found shows that I probably would not have watched. So there is a lot out there. You just have to find the right content.
Yeah. It seems at this point, Charlene, that Disney Plus is obviously a standout. The Mandalorian was a big thing, but they also had other shows like Diary of a Female President, some other ones that really caught on. It seems that HBO Max, Love Life, got mixed reviews with Anna Kendrick's series, but that is coming back for a second season. It looks like that's the first signature show of that service. Peacock, we're going to see the original start to come up with Brave New World and others next month. It seems to me, of these services, Apple TV, which started off so badly in so many ways, it looks like it's getting its mojo together. It has come up with series like Little America and Visible Out on Television that a lot of people think are going to be in the top 10 of new TV series this year. Little America might be an Emmy Award nominee when those awards are announced. Those nominations are announced. Dickinson just won the Peabody Award, which I think is an amazing thing for a streamer, first year out of the block to get a Peabody Award for that series. And it just seems that their mojo is finally coming together.
Well, you know, I think a lot of these services have been planning and developing content and have been very focused on creating quality content to set their services apart. And I think it's beginning to show with exactly what you're saying about Apple TV. The other interesting thing is, I wonder, and maybe Simon and Mark, you can talk to this better than a researcher that I am, but I would see more co-productions and partnerships coming up. So, yes, you can put all of your money into a production, but you want to hedge your bets and you want to mitigate your risks by maybe doing more co-production and partnerships with content creation. Are you seeing that?
I'm totally seeing that. I think that's a really good point. That's totally, you know, the way to make all of this work, you have to find ways to do it, you know, that's going to work financially as well. And yes, I totally see that as a growing trend in our business. And, you know, the real beauty of all of this, because at this point, you know, I sit at my desk and putting my research hat on, I think to myself, well, when are we going to cap out? When is this going to slow down? When is enough enough? But there really is. There's so many great ways to produce. Well, there, you know, produce content. Now it's more of a challenge because realistically, production hasn't really started up yet, or it's slowly starting up yet. But you know, there's so many ways to do it, and there's, you know, there's different variables, and the content has been stellar. You know, I'm a member of the Television Critics Association, and I just put in my choices for the nominations this summer. You know, we're not going to have a live critics tour, unfortunately, but we are still going to have, you know, we're still going to give out the annual PCA awards. And I had so many shows to choose. It was like, which one? I only have 5 slots in this category. That's a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the quality of the shows, I have to say, has been absolutely amazing. They've been more on the mark than off the mark. Bring It For Me, by the way, has this thought in our chat room. Who still watches TV anymore when you have the internet? But here's the thing. The latest stats are that more than 80% of all households have these smart sets and these devices, and they more of them have artificial intelligence voice features popping in, like Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant, and this is how they're watching and using television. That was a story all day long with these new funds, that a lot of the people that are watching television are now 1849, 1854, 1834, and they're spending at least half their time in terms of TV usage watching on the smart TV set of devices, as opposed to watching linear networks. They're watching smart TV distributed services. So I hate to say it, Brian Boy, but yeah, people are watching TV and they're watching it in a big way, especially in light of this pandemic.
Well, you know, it's interesting you should bring that up, because I was thinking, how can you market your program so that people can discover them? You have to get really expansive in your marketing plans. And, you know, I don't know if either of you have heard of really groundbreaking marketing techniques, but, you know, I wonder what will be developed in the next 6 months to get the word out.
You know what I was noticing, Charlene and Simon, one thing that I was really enjoying myself personally, there was a lot of live events. You know, my wife and I, for example, this dates, I'm thinking this was last fall already, but we went into the city. There was an event with the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. They had a Q&A. They had the two stars there, and they spoke to an audience. They fielded questions, and I started to see before the coronavirus broke, there was all these events opening, and you know, it was kind of making it more interactive, more live, and it felt like a really live element to a lot of these programs. And who doesn't want to go see their, you know, their favorite shows, meet the actors? And I started seeing a lot of that. That, of course, is on hold now, but hopefully, eventually, that'll start. You know, that'll go back again. But there's many ways to promote shows, and you know, there's many ways to do it. But I think the live element was really getting very common. You know, we'll have to see what happens.
Well, and Mark, to your point, immersive events. So I went to the Mrs. Maisel Carnegie Deli, and that was much fun. And that really sort of created enthusiasm for the show.
I thought that was such a smart thing, by the way. You know, because that deli is really a part of the show. There was always a scene in that deli, and you'd watch them eating the food. I'm like, I want to be there also. I thought that was really smart. That was a really clever thing.
Yeah. Hopefully we can get back to more of that.
I would love I hope so.
By the way, in our second half hour, I want to ask both of you if we're going to see the return of when this pandemic lifts its ugly head, and I think there are signs that it is, despite some of the reporting in the media, whether or not we're going to get upfronts and new front ceremonies back so we can be face-to-face and voice-to-voice with people as opposed to being virtual. So I want to talk about that and some other things in our second half hour. Right, we're going to take a quick break. We've got Mark Berman from The Plumbing Insider, Charlene White from Media Village, our roundtable hour on TV 2020 for Halfway Mark. We'll continue shortly. First, here's some words to the fine folks, our sponsor, Audible.com. Trevor Noah has a wonderful book out, which you can hear if you want to become a trial member of Audible.com. It's a terrific bestseller, Born as a Crime. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/televised and get that one-month trial for yourself. You know, audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information, plus inspiration, too. Over 200,000 titles to choose from at any one time, all genres, all categories, and you can listen to them on any device and whoever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. And if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get 3 free audiobooks for the trial of one. 2 of them from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That includes One Woman, One Man performances, the best of Broadway, Off-Broadway, and regional theater, and original audio productions. And that's not all. For a limited time, when you go through the trial run, you can also get some free wellness programs as well, audio and great. And it makes a wonderful after Father's Day gift for you or someone you love. So check out audibletrial.com/televised today and hear for yourself how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. This is Tomorrow Televised. We have the program all about the two. We're normally with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker and TuneIn Radio. We are here at a later hour, 2 hours later than normal, because of the digital content new front. We've got some more news notes coming your way from the news front, other places too. And also coming up our next half hour, in addition to more of our roundtable, we have our classic trivia question of the week. If you didn't know, last week we brought the question back because now our stationery store in our neighborhood is finally able, so we can get envelopes and mail our prizes to. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win A Very English Scandal by John Preston, the book inspired the award-winning miniseries last year starring Hugh Grant. So stay tuned. We'll give you the question, and if you email me the correct answer, you can be our next classic trivia winner. When we come back, more of our roundtable, our classic trivia question, and coming up at the top of the hour, we'll take a look at one of the new players in the world of smart TV set making, Omnia Media. You have some very interesting services they're doing in the world of esports, gaming, and kids. Greg Campanis joins me from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and we're also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Don't forget, TuneIn Radio is your home for the Coronavirus News Channel, 24/7 reporting from all over the globe, plus podcasts and other original material. Stay in touch with what's going on, the Coronavirus News Channel, 24/7, TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Welcome back to Mark's Morning Televised on this Monday, the day after Father's Day, also second full day of summer 2020. Tom Applebaum with you live from New York, and let's resume our roundtable hour on what's happened this first half of TV2020. Once again, rejoining me here in New York, the plumbing insider himself, Mark Berman, and my colleague at Media Village, the Media Leadership website columnist, Charlene Weiser. Charlene, when it comes to where we're at in television, what was your feeling about... Was there any surprises, let's say, that you felt happened this year that you didn't expect, aside from the coronavirus pandemic and its impact on?
Well, you read my mind. That is probably the biggest surprise. I do have to say, what I was surprised to read and to hear from executives in the industry is the inclination of advertisers to pull back during this time would have been ill-advised. And that, in fact, it was important to keep the advertising message in front of the viewer, but making it more relevant to what was going on. And a couple of companies have found, including I've heard Analytic Partners, they're finding that for those advertisers who stayed in the market and continue to advertise and tailored their messages, they're seeing a much greater increase in rebounding of their business. So that to me was a surprise. My inclination would have been, gosh, we have to pull our money from the market, but that would have been a bad move.
Mm-hmm. Mark, your surprise.
You know, I wouldn't call it a surprise. I would say it's something that I was expecting, but I'm kind of glad to see it. You know, during this situation where the outlets need to fill their schedules, they need to provide content, we're starting to see more sharing of content across different platforms. So, for example, if you're a broadcast network, you have a digital element, you have a digital arm, so you have a library of shows that you could use to fill schedules, and the CW has certainly put that into play. Fox is utilizing that, and we're starting to see more shared content, which is not a surprise, but it's something that I think could be very beneficial. And really what was surprising to me, and I mentioned this before, but I'm really very pleasantly surprised how so many outlets have adapted to this so quickly. They sort of said, you know, we need to do this. We're going to make things virtual. We're going to do it. So we're going to adapt. And hats off to them. They really did it. You know, they really, you know, it was a situation where nobody, you know, nobody laid down and said, we're done. They fought back and they were creative. And, you know, as much as that shouldn't surprise me, it kind of does. You know, everybody stepped up to the plate.
By the way, if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name, bring a boy is still in the room, Greg Weston Philadelphia's in the room, so chat room or phone call, we take it, we hear you, because we want you to be interactive with us. You know, for me, Charlene and Mark, I thought there were three surprises, two on the great side and one on the negative side. On the great side, I thought the push with diversity, we are seeing more and more deals, more and more people launching production companies to do more diverse programming. It's really been wonderful to see what's been happening, and it's been all sorts of players leading the way, and all sorts of ventures like Sundance Episodic Lab, the media, the Writers Ready Room for the American Film Institute, the Native American Showrunner Project, also on that. Secondly, I thought the way the advertisers handled the pandemic, the advertising that they did about, you know, we're all in this together and so on and so forth, I thought it was really outstanding. It was very inventive. It was very creative. It really took a lot for them to make a 360 in terms of their ad commitments and showcase all over the place. I thought it was really, really super on the part of big and small advertisers alike. And also some of the virtual concerts, like the One World Together at Home and a few others, that the Rise Up New York event here in New York, I thought was sensational, with the Billy Joel finish involving the lights of Times Square and so forth. On the negative side, the cancel culture. The decision by A&E to can Live PD, the decision by Paramount Network to cancel Cops, the decision, the talk that Nickelodeon is going to cancel Paw Patrol, the decision I learned about today that LEGO is taking out patrol cars from the thing. This cancel culture, to me, is, I think, a really negative thing in the wake of these riots and protests and so on. I think people are HBO Max taking off Gone with the Wind. I want to throw it out to both of you. What do you think about this cancel culture, where it seems anything with the police, now it's like it's terrible?
Well, I'll start if you don't mind, but I'm hearing already that a Dick Van Dyke, they're banning now. There was a scene in Mary Poppins with Dick Van Dyke, and I have to be honest, look, you have to address what's going on in this world. I mean, you want to do that. But I think making the decision to pull Gone with the Wind, for example, I think that's a big mistake, and I'll tell you why. I think, I think we should not hide from the past, and I think we need to learn from the, to plan better for the future. So you don't want to forget the past. You can't take a movie like Gone with the Wind from 1939 off. I mean, there's no reason why it still can't be shown, but when you look at something like that, when you look at a lot of the content from back then, you have to say that was then, this is now, we learn from the mistakes, we plan for the future, that will never happen again. You can't hide from it. You have to accept the reality of it and plan better. So I think that's a mistake. And, like this Dick Van Dyke thing now, I think it is going too far to some degree.
Mm-hmm. I feel that I understand the heightened sensitivity, and I'm not sure where one makes the decision to cancel and not cancel. Gone with the Wind, I'm not sure. Birth of a Nation, absolutely. Or if you're going to air it, air it with a contextual wraparound. So I'm not sure I'm the best person to decide where the line is, but I'm hoping that as an industry, that we're able to contextualize where it needs to be and make the hard decision where it needs to be.
Very true. I'll just say one more thing. You look at a movie like Gone with the Wind, unfortunately, if you're going to take something like that, or if you're really going to have to start pulling other things and this and that and
mm-hmm.
this and that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget the past, but let's learn from it and let's make the future a better situation, make it more diversified, make everybody equal partners in this. That's the way I look at it. Don't hide from what happened, but make it better.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
It's interesting that for the last couple of months, Turner Classic Movies has run this fantastic featurette about blackface. And it doesn't stop them from showing the movies, but it gives you some perspective. And they've run Gone with the Wind, for years with no issues. And when they have with their hosts tried to give, context to it, that's what really bothers me. But and you wonder, again, we have a call coming in shortly, where does it stop? That's the thing that gets you personally crazy. Where does it stop? When does it stop? Doesn't it go really too far? And I'd love to hear what some people say about it. Let's take this call. Hello, you're on Tomorrow We Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Good afternoon. My name is Suzette, and I'm calling from Southern California.
Tina, great to have you with us. What's up? What are your thoughts? And what would you like our roundtable to address?
Oh, well, thank you. The gentleman that spoke last, when he spoke about diversifying and trying to make it better for everyone in the future, I think we're... And personally, in my opinion, I think networks try and go too far to that they're basically tripping over themselves to try and please everyone. And there's not going to be a way to please everyone. And in that attempt, you end up excluding people when that's done. And when there's no, it's a real hard thing to do to be able to include everyone. and striving to do so, somebody always gets cut out. But I think that the cancel culture, that's another thing. The cancel culture is a group of people compared to the 300 million people that we have as a population that is controlling advertising and network programming to the point to where it's actually driving that network, that cancellation. The more it's said, the more power that they gain, the more they'll, you know, try and impose that cancellation on anything that they don't like. And that's unfair to the rest of America. And that, you know, I wish there was a way to have networks stand on their own, you know, with advertising to stand with them to put a freaking halt to this cancel.
And Dina, you raise a wonderful, Dina, before you go, you raise a wonderful point, which is this. If you don't like the program, don't watch it. And if enough people don't watch it, the show will go off the air, naturally. It will not be a force. It will not be because of boycotts or whatever. That's why we have the incredible diversity of television that we have. What bothered me personally on live TV was I thought that, you know, this was A&E's number one show. I thought it was a cowardly act to cancel the show. Dan Abrams should have been notified about this. He should have had an opportunity to see if he could address the issues, which then he would have addressed. And on top of that, Big Fish Entertainment, the production company that made Live PD, now can't make Live Love and Hip Hop on VH1 because VH1 has taken their contract out. And it goes back to, like, where does this stop? So, you know, again, if you don't like the show, don't watch it. And you have the power to determine what shows go on, shows go off.
I agree with you completely. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Dina, thank you very much.
You know,
thanks for making the contribution.
Can I add something? Can I just say something? You know,
you got it, Mark.
There's been a lot of debate about, you know, A&E pulling Live PD and cops going off the air and this and that. And I think the situation with A&E, I think there's a lesson to be learned here. They made a very, very, very big mistake. And what A&E did was, you know, they put Live PD on, I think it was 5 years ago. It became a success for them, a very big success, and they built the network around Live PD. Everything, it was constantly running, and when you think of A&E, you think of Live PD now, and I think they had too much of an emphasis on that one show. And that's a big mistake that outlets should not make. You have a hit show, wonderful, move on to the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And they became too concentrated on that show, and now they're going to pay the price.
Yeah. Well, Mark, that's an interesting – sorry.
Now, go ahead, Charlene.
Oh, I was going to say that's a very interesting point, and something that we haven't quite addressed yet along those lines. There's a lot of ad-supported television out there, but also with the proliferation of services, there's a lot of non-advertising supported. You have the premium services, you have the SVOD. So it may be that certain types of programs will migrate to the non-advertiser-supported platforms, and we'll see how they do there with viewers.
Let's get into the second half, since we're in the second half of our roundtable hour. Let's get into what are you expecting from the second half of television? And I want to go back to sports for a moment, because it looks like we're going to, if these sports events happen, we're going to see a mammoth, maybe the biggest collection of big sports events on at one time, namely the major golf tournaments, the U.S. Open in tennis, the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup playoffs, Major League Soccer, Major League Cup, and the National Football League, and maybe baseball if they can get their act together. And that is an incredible amount of sports, big television in so short a time. How do you think it's all going to play out?
Wow. I wonder, for me, we would have to know whether there's going to be a second wave of the virus. Can teams play against each other? If so, are they going to travel around, or are they going to be concentrated in, you know, one location to play games? Who knows? Who knows?
Well, you know, I think I already anticipate, you know, summer 2021 when we have the long-awaited Olympics that was supposed to be this summer. I think viewers are going to be very invested in it, very hungry for it. At least I know I will. And I'm not the biggest sports fan, but I think once we start seeing the, you know, the live sports come back, oh, there's going to be a huge hunger for it because, again, I said this earlier, the one facet of the business in this very changing, multifaceted business is sports is as strong as it ever was. Any, you know, it's automatic eyeballs, automatic, you know, different demographics. And I think viewers are going to be very hungry for it, you know. I mean, even now during baseball season, you know, not to have it right now. And so I think viewers will be very hungry for it. And I think sports is going to be a real ticket to our future. But the, like Charlene said, we still don't know. We don't know how they're going to do it. We don't know yet.
Mark, I'll start this with you. What do you see as, like, the things to watch, the big thing, like the one or two big things to watch the second half of the year?
Well, you know, I have to go right to Netflix again, and I'm gonna mention some shows that I've watched that I watched this already last month. I couldn't get enough of it, and it was only 4 hours. But it's called Unorthodox, and it's the tale of a young lady in the Hasidic community who decides she no longer wants to be a part of it. Just absolutely brilliant. Again, it's an example of Netflix going to another country and picking up a show. I just got through with Dead to Me, which to me was like, I felt like I was watching one of those wonderful serialized dramas. I loved it. I just started watching a show on Netflix called Sweet Magnolias, a drama. The Babysitter's Club is coming up. I was completely invested in, not because I love the content, but I watched Jeffrey Epstein's Filthy Rich on Netflix. And very difficult to watch, but, you know, something that was very eerily addictive. Little Fires Everywhere on Hulu is an option you could watch. Perry Mason just came back. This is the third version we've had of the classic, you know, legal show. And there's so many different options. And, you know, sadly, when you go through a list, it's going to be 95%, digital, the digital streamers. But there's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of stuff. And I want to give just a thumbs up to, you know, Pop TV. They just recently did something very clever. You know, they picked up One Day at a Time from Netflix after they canceled it. And they decided, you know, during the coronavirus, let's do an animated special. Let's do an animated episode. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was so much fun to watch, so creative. So, you know, most of my recommendations are going to be from digital, mainly Netflix.
Incidentally, Mark, that was a wonderful episode. And we have Brent Miller, by the way, who's the executive producer of that animated episode, who worked with Norman Lear and with the creators of One Day, Gloria Calvin Keller and Mike Royce on that episode. And it was they did that in very record time. To do that episode, and it was produced in the United States, very in record time for an animated episode, given what the lead time that they deal with.
And that's an example of executives sitting, you know, discussing probably on a Zoom meeting. What can we do to keep this going? Or what can we do to offer something different? Let's think of something, and they did, and that was a smart thing to do. And you know, we're seeing a lot of creativity during this situation.
It's going to be Perry Mason premieres tonight on HBO, and it's already gotten very good reviews, especially for Matthew Rice's performance as that very indelible legal character. Charlene, what do you see as like the things to watch, trends to watch the second half?
I'm almost embarrassed to point out what we watch, but Perry Mason, we actually saw the first episode on TV last night. We DVR'd it, and it was great. We enjoyed the beauty of the execution of it, and we thought the storyline was well done. We watched Penny Dreadful. We're watching a lot of Amazon Prime. To show you my interests, I sat through a 24-episode lecture series on the plague years of 1340s, which was actually pretty fascinating and related a lot to what we're seeing today. But for me, I think I'm going to be very interested in news and leading up to the election. I think there's going to be a lot of programming content to watch regarding the political situation, and I think it will draw a lot of viewers.
Yeah.
For me,
a couple of things. First of all, I'm curious to see what's going to happen with Peacock next month when they finally bring out their originals like Brave New World, which originally was supposed to be a USA Network show, Battlestar Galactica, Sam Esmail's redo of that classic, the second redo of that classic series. First one, of course, was what Ron Moore did with at Sci-Fi years ago. Second thing is these fall schedules and whether they end up being what they're being. For example, I think it's a very smart move by ABC, and this is the first, that they're going to extend summer fun and games in the fall by running a back-to-back of Super Rocket Sweep, which it was supposed to be this summer. It's going to become a fall show now, the Leslie Jones remake of that classic game show, and then followed by Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And that leads to another thing, which is the game show scene. How are game shows going to adjust if they can't go back, if they have to go back in production with social distancing? If I'm Emma Walpole, the executive producer of The Price is Right, if I'm John Quinnett, Let's Make a Deal, I have to wonder, how do I do that show? Because that show is so dependent on that studio audience and how big it is and how vocal they are. And the same thing with, because the contestants come from the audience. You look at Family Feud, Steve Harvey with that crowd, how he reacts to it. You got to wonder, is this going to be a tipping point for how game shows are done on television?
You know, Simon, I was wondering about that too, and I wonder if game shows can make the transition to more of a conferencing format, a different form of immersive TV, since there's a lot of gaming done on devices now. It might be a good transition point for game shows.
You know, certain game shows like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which you had mentioned earlier, that, you know, they did do that. They started doing it that, and it was fine. It didn't really make all that much of a difference. I mean, it was fine. But, yes, when you have, like, a Let's Make a Deal and the audience is so heavily involved, but I wouldn't rule anything out right now. I wouldn't rule any of these shows out right now. I mean, you know, look how the talk shows, you know, if you thought about this maybe 4 months ago, when you thought, well, how could somebody do a talk show without an audience? They managed to do it. They managed to do it. You know, the game shows might be more of a challenge, some of them, but I wouldn't rule anything out right now because, you know, people have been coming up with ways to do it, and what Charlene said could be a total option.
And let's not also forget that we have the return of Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy, which may go without an audience. Mike Richards is taking over both shows from Harry Freeman, who did a fantastic job the last quarter century with them. And, of course, we're all wishing Alex Trebek the best of luck, given what he is dealing with.
Well, those two shows, yeah, I mean, I could see them being done without an audience. I think you could, you know, it would be easier to do that way than maybe like a Price is Right or a Let's Make a Deal. But it won't be the same. You know, it'll have a different feel, but it's not impossible to do. And Bravo to Alex Trebek, who, you know, knock on wood, seems to be doing okay. You know, good for him. He's a fighter and, you know, a favorite, and so glad that he's still able to do the show.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the highlights this year was the tournament on ABC, which was wonderfully done and great audience. It's been redone now. It was repeated recently in the syndication version. And what Alex has done over this last year dealing with pancreatic cancer has been a lesson for all of us. A lesson for all of us.
Without a doubt.
Yes.
Without a doubt. Really, really. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mark. Go ahead.
No, I can't say enough about, you know, you see somebody like an Alex Trebek that, you know, he's fought back and he's in his second year after being diagnosed. He's managing. I can't speak for him, of course, but so happy to see him still doing it, and you know that what a message that sends. What a message.
Yeah. Two more questions. We'll go round table on this. What was your sleeper show the first 6 months this year? The show that was a sleeper in terms of you watching it. New series.
Ooh. Wow. I'd have to think. Mark, if you can start, I'll rack my brain.
I'm going to start. I'll start. You know, yeah, I know. It's hard to, you know, there's so much, Charlene. There's so many shows. Like,
yeah.
What was my sleeper? I guess I could call it my sleeper, but I can't say enough good things about Unorthodox. I kind of stumbled on it. I didn't hear a lot about it at that time. And it just immersed me and got, I was so involved in it. I'm hopeful there'll be a second season. And if there is an Emmy Awards, which is another, you know, question up in the air, I think it's going to be leading a lot of it's going to get a ton of nominations. And I would say that probably was my sleeper. And maybe I'll give you a second one. I never thought I never could have imagined I would sit through anything with Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, why would I want to watch something with that, an individual like that, after what he did? But it just the way it, the stories that were told, the brave woman that stepped forward, and, you know, I feel like it's something everybody should watch. So those are my sleepers, really.
Yeah. I would say my sleeper, and it's a real surprise that could occur late in the season, Personal Injury Court in syndication. This is probably the most courtroom show daytime show we've ever done, where personal injury cases are actually litigated, and we're talking about damages in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars. The judge on that program, his name is Judge Greg Brown, is marvelous. It really explains the situation very well. It's terrifically done, and it's sort of creeping up in the courtroom show daytime syndication scene. It's been renewed for a second year. Although it was on WLNY Channel 55 from 5 to 6 o'clock, it was just taken off for Last Man Standing, for Mike and Molly reruns, because Last Man Standing is just taken off at 7:30. But if you can find it, I think you really will like it. It's very interesting, and it sheds a whole new world on an area of law that I think a lot of people don't know a lot about. All right. One or two developments. Charlene, well, what's your sleeper now that we've given you some chance?
I've enjoyed Homecoming, which is an Amazon Prime show. It's in its second season. I'm about to start the second season. It's an interesting concept, very conspiratorial. It took me a while to get into it, but I think for me that was one sleeper show. And the other, I was able to watch the first season of Boss with Kelsey Grammer, which, you know, at first I was a little put off by it, but I really got into it. It angered me, but at the same time it drew me in.
Okay. And finally, and Mark, I'll start with you on this, new show and or new service to watch out for second half of this year.
Oh, that's a very good that's a good question. I would say I think we should keep a positive eye on Peacock. I really do. And the show that I'm really curious about, and it is on Peacock, I'll have to stick with Peacock, is Brave New World. You know, the thing about Peacock, which I find very positive about Peacock, the library is extensive. You know, the universal library that they have is extensive. And I don't see viewers going to Peacock just to watch Law and Order and the mountain of a Law and Order episodes and the spin-offs and all that. I think there's a lot of good content. So I'm gonna say Peacock, and I've got to go with Brave New World, and that's starting in the middle of July. So I'm looking forward to it.
Great, Charlene.
I happen to like the premium services of HBO and Showtime. Call me old fashioned. I'm looking forward to seeing The Undoing and The Comey Rule. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see if they can draw me in. But those would be my choices.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in terms of new service, imbd.tv, that is Amazon's ad-supported programming service. And there's a lot of rumors out there that they're going to get into the original programming game, the way that Amazon is already in with Prime Video. They were supposed to, by the way, be at the original Digital Content New Fronts when they were announced earlier this year. They're not on the schedule right now. It's interesting to see whether they take that service, which they got, I think, about a year ago, and again, we'll see if they do original programming. That could be really, really interesting. And then two series I will put down, one which premieres next month on Apple, Little Voice, the Sarah Bareilles musical drama, which they played the theme song a year ago at the Apple TV Plus was announced at that press conference, which was an example of how you don't do a press conference, by the way, to announce a service at Cupertino, California with Tim Cook and Company. One of the highlights was Sarah Bareilles doing the theme song. Premieres in July, mid-July on Apple TV Plus. And secondly, The Equalizer on CBS with Queen Latifah in the lead role. I was a big fan of the original Equalizer series with Edward Woodward. To me, it was the show that brought TV production back to New York. Edward Woodward should have won Emmys left and right for that portrayal. It's one of the great character studies of 1980s television. It was absolutely well made in New York. Stuart Copeland's music should have won an Emmy for sure. It wasn't even nominated. And I think Queen Latifah and her Flavor Unit production company may be the people to put this, to get this back on television and make it work. And I'm also looking forward to Kung Fu, by the way, the new version, which will be the first one that Asian Americans have a big role to play in, both in front and behind the camera. That's the CW will be doing. Good move by the CW by Warner Brothers to make that happen. Charlene Weiser, Mark Berman, thank you both very, very much for a sensational hour discussing where TV is at these first 6 months and where it might go. By the way, Mark Berman, the Programming Insider, check out that website. Also, check out his email service. It comes out every morning. It's marvelous, marvelous reporting on what's going on in the world of television. For more details about both, it's theprogramminginsider.com. And Charlene Weiser's work you can find regularly at MediaVillage.com. The Media Leadership website is www.MediaVillage.com. Check it out. You'll be well rewarded. Mark, Charlene, thank you both very much. Have a super week ahead.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you,
it's been fabulous. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.
You too. Take care. Mark Berman, Charlene Weiser joining me here in New York. When we come back, our Classic Trivia question of the week and one of the latest people to hit the world of smart TV-delivered programming services, Greg Campanis, from his new company, and that is Omnia Media. He'll join us in Los Angeles after we pause, top of the hour, right here, right now, at www.blogtalkradiospeaker.com and tuneinradio.com. Together, reach over 45 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, Blog Talk Radio is your home for IFM Radio Nation. It's a musical nation, and it's going on tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, IFM Radio Nation, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker.com. Don't forget, best feature on Spreaker 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome to our second hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon, the Monday after Father's Day, and the start of summer 2020. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. A big 88 degrees at the top of the hour. We may hit 90 before the week is out. And if you have a question or comment for our guests ahead, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere you catch us across the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And with our chat room going, our people in the room, bring it Boye and Rick Webb, our friends from Philadelphia. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. My next guest is one of the newest players in the world of smart TV set and device distributed services. The company is called Omnia Media, and they're involved in a number of different genres, gaming, esports, and kids. Joining us live in Los Angeles, the Senior Vice President and General Manager of the operation, Greg Campanis. Greg, it's great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So, Greg, tell us what Omnia Media is all about. When was it started, and what does it do in the world of smart TV sets and smart device content?
Yeah, so Omni Media actually was started about 6 years ago, mainly as a YouTube company. So started as sort of an old multi-channel network. Over the last few years, we've pivoted the company a little bit, to focus on gaming. So we mainly focus on gaming video content on digital platforms where we either manage talent, so YouTubers, Twitch streamers, et cetera, or we have four major brands that have about like 200 million views a month on YouTube, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, and OTT, where we're pretty active. We're owned by a company named Blue Ant Media that's out of Toronto. And so given our expertise in the digital space, we also help Blue Ant with particularly the AVOD OTT distribution on a few brands that they own, one being Zumu, which is a kids network outside the U.S., and another one called Love Nature, which is a natural history, kind of traditional cable channel in Canada and throughout Europe, but we're launching it in the U.S. as an AVOD OTT channel.
Mm-hmm. I just did a story that will be in Media Village this week about Vevo, the music video service that originally started as a website. And 2 years ago, they decided we can't just be a website. We have to be on smart TV sets. We have to be on devices like Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Chromecast, NVIDIA Shield, and so on and so forth. And it seems that your organization is following the same course. Why is that?
Yeah, well, I think it's something someone said earlier. There's more and more platforms for people to watch content. And some of those are device-specific, right? So if you have a consumer that you know likes your content but it only watches everything through a Roku, you have to be on Roku. You have to be on Amazon. So I think, you know, we're all about platform diversification. Although for us, we tend to try to be, I like to call it platform specific. So we kind of identify the platforms that we think work for our brands or where we'll get legitimate viewership and really kind of hammer down on those. So we've had a lot of success on Xumo, X-U-M-O. We have two channels at Samsung TV Plus that perform really well for us. And we just launched three channels with Roku recently as well, and then are identifying a bunch of other platforms that we're either working with on a linear basis or on a VOD basis.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the channels in a moment, but first, as I mentioned in the first hour, the big message from the Digital Content New Frontier in New York this afternoon is smart TV sets are where it's at. Smart TV devices are where it's at. We're now seeing a tipping point where either close to the majority of viewers or over the majority of viewers are now watching these services on these sets. Do you buy that argument?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the other reason though that you hear that a lot from the agency side in particular is it's a more brand safe environment than they view some of the digital only platforms, so like YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. And I think also, to be honest, it's something they understand, right? It looks similar to TV, really, at the end of the day. I think when I tried to explain what OTT, AVOD, linear channels were to a friend of mine who's in politics, he's like, oh, so like how TV was in the 80s before cable. And I'm like, yeah, I guess that's true. So I do think there's a segment of it that just the industry understands it. So, you know, it's a little harder to try to be brand safe in the YouTube world.
Mm-hmm. So with gaming and esports, where are we at? There's definitely a growing movement to make this field TV friendly, not just with unscripted television programming, but scripted TV. How is Omnia playing this gaming esports universe?
Yeah, sure. So like I said, a lot of our brands actually started on YouTube for the most part. So we own three big brands that kind of look at it from different areas. So, you know, gameplay highlights is just something that gamers really like to see. So we have a brand called BCC. It's essentially the sports center of Fortnite. And we've actually launched outputs of that or other series around Call of Duty and now Grand Theft Auto. We have, you know, those on that side, we have three shows on Snapchat with that brand that do like 30 million views a month. And then we have Arcade Cloud, which kind of comes from gaming, more from the scripted animated side. So it's adult animation about video games. Some of our best performing series there is like kind of like Wreck-It Ralph meets Fortnite, essentially. So it's like four characters competing in a battle royale game, which is incredibly popular for us, not only on YouTube and Snapchat, but does really well on our OTT platforms now as well. So I think what you're seeing is, you know, at the end of the day, gamers are a pretty diverse set of folks, but you could create, you know, strong scripted stuff that kind of comes from a gaming point of view a little bit. And you're seeing some of the platforms like Quibi, I know has something in development that's sort of an unscripted, I think it's unscripted gaming kind of like, I can't remember how to describe it, but, you know, we find all these platforms are interested in more gaming content. So, you know, we're up to seven shows with Snapchat now and are in the process of developing a lot of stuff to kind of try to sell to these other platforms as well. And then we've also had a success in the past selling shows to Facebook Watch and also YouTube Originals kind of in and around the gaming space.
Do you see Snapchat, by the way, as a testing ground for TV shows? I saw their Partner Summit event last week. In fact, I did a MediaGhost.com, which is now available at MediaGhost.com. And what really impressed me about that is that I could see a lot of the Snapchat program becoming TV program, especially the ones that have augmented reality. I think they're really onto something in terms of augmented reality, using that as part of the content, whether it's scripted or unscripted.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I actually think people are sleeping a bit on Snapchat, on the content side in particular. I mean, their viewership is incredible. Like, you know, like I said, we have seven shows with them, and we do 50 million viewers a month, unique. Now, granted, there's probably some duplication between that, and we don't get that reports. But yeah, you know, it's and on their scripted stuff, on their scripted and the unscripted stuff, I mean, the format is TV format just a little faster in a shorter time period. So could you combine that, you know, and turn those into longer half hours? You know, absolutely. And it's something we think a lot working with our on our Love Nature brand. We've been working with some pitches for Snapchat with the linear folks, thinking about exactly doing that. Like, how do we shoot something that we can make both sort of a Snapchat and a linear version out of the same original base content?
And incidentally, Snapchat will be one of the early presenters tomorrow at the Digital Content New Front. That will be happening virtually out of New York. There's like about 9,000-10,000 people who are checking that out about all 5 days this week. Greg Campanis is the Senior Vice President and General Manager of OmniMedia. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Some of that will be live from New York. We're normally on 3:30 Eastern New Pacific here on BTR, also on Speaker.com and TuneIn Radio. Plus, we're on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Greg, well, make the phone ring 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Take a bit of a break because we want to give you our classic trivia question of the week, our feature that we run for several years, and we brought it back finally. Now that our stationery store in the neighborhood can give us envelopes that we can send our prizes to. So here it is, our current classic trivia question of the week. If you first win the correct answer, you will win the book, A Very English Scandal by John Preston. It's the book that inspired the award-winning miniseries last year starring Hugh Grant. Here's the question. Who played Superboy in the 1980s syndicated series Superboy? Who played Superboy on the 1980s syndicated series Superboy? The series, by the way, ran four seasons, 1988 to 1992, and in the process, there were two people who played Superboy. We will take one, either answer or both answers. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, when you email, enclose your full name and your full name address. If you win, we get the prize out to you as soon as possible. If you've won before, please let somebody else win. And remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So get involved and all the very best. And if you missed the question a moment ago, we'll repeat it before we wrap up for the day. Greg, what are some of the original series that you've commissioned for the gaming esports services you have on smart TVs?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
What are some of the original series that you have commissioned for the OmniMedia services on smart TVs and smart devices?
Yeah, so right now most of the content we use on our OTT platforms comes from other places, right? So on our gaming content, we basically are creating kind of half hour or hour long versions of some of our short form content and extending it into OTT platforms. It's kind of similar how you were discussing the Snapchat stuff, right? Like The Squad, which is a scripted animated series of ours on YouTube and Snapchat, where, you know, each episode is usually like 3 to 5 minutes. So for our OTT platform, we actually create seasons or episodes that are half hour each that kind of keep the story going, but just kind of more in a sit back experience as opposed to the lean in of YouTube. So that's generally our platform, or generally our strategy on the gaming content. We're not producing right now original stuff for OTT, just because while the platforms are great, I don't think the economics are quite there yet for like totally original production. But I think they're going to get there soon.
Is it part of the game plan? The game plan down the road?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as those platforms grow, it's definitely something we're going to look at creating more original content specifically for them. I mean, generally our strategy is to try to create content that can work across platforms, not the same piece of content, because I think you do need to produce content to every platform's, you know, specific kind of use cases. But, you know, for us to create gaming content that then works on Snapchat in kind of a short form approach, works in OTT in kind of a longer form, half hour form, and then maybe works on YouTube or Instagram in some other kind of format is kind of the kind of holy grail for us. That's how we kind of have maintained profitability and growth.
Now, with your smart TV set and device distributed services in the esports and gaming arenas, Are they ad-supported? And if so, how are you doing with ad support?
Yeah, so everything we do is ad-supported. So on the gaming side, like I said, we're on XUMO, TV Plus, Samsung, a bunch of others. How are we doing? It's kind of, that's an interesting question. I mean, the on all our digital platforms, you know, March to April was tough, right, to be quite honest. But things have definitely started to pick up, I'd say, since mid-April, late April. And we're seeing a lot more money back in the market, particularly on the programmatic side. You know, we're still seeing some buyers pushing things, but definitely progressing in a good format. And to what your point earlier too, right? Like more and more buyers are interested in OTT only inventory. You know, we have a lot of buyers who we work with that we might start working with them around a YouTube buy, and then they'll come back and say, "Now the client, I can only buy OTT. You know, I can't buy YouTube, or I can only buy your OTT YouTube." So it's definitely a kind of a good thing to have in our chest to pull out to sell.
Before we go on, I want to give everybody some News Note quickies. We promised this earlier in the program, so let's do that right now. These are News Note quickies that we've got for you, and they're rapid fire. Showtime will bring The Circus back. That's their political series on August 10th. For life star Nicholas Pinnock has formed a new production company called Silver Milk. That's Silver Milk with two TV projects in development. Real Music Television launched earlier today on Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, Roku, and TV sets with the Android operating system. The service is commercial-free. It's available for $2.99 per month. It's music performances and associated series. Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, will host the weekend's Global Citizen Concert. That's this weekend's simulcast on NBC, MSNBC, and several TV-connected devices. Roku, we're going to talk about that in a moment, is now running on its platform more than 5,000. That's right. 5,000 channels on its platform. And Discovery will premiere a Spanish-language network devoted to matters of home and food called Hogar de HGTV, short for Home and Garden Television. That will happen June 30th on Cox Cable Systems around the country. Charter Spectrum Systems here in New York will follow on August 1st. And that is News Notes for today. And speaking of Roku, which now has 5,000 channels plus its own Roku channel, how are you involved with them? You said earlier that you now are doing three channels, all ad support, through BlueAnt on that service,
yeah,
and that platform.
That's correct. Yeah, we launched our Love Nature, our wildlife and animal channel on the platform when they launched their live TV service a few weeks ago, as well as our kids brand Zumu, and then we also have Love Nature Español in their Spanish language section. So we're pretty excited about that Roku launch. You know, again, based on our experience with some of the other platforms. And knowing how much larger Roku is, you know, we have pretty high expectations for our channels on that platform.
Now, with these Roku channels, which probably also will go on other smart TV set device platforms down the road, are they a mix of live action and animated programming, or is it all animated or live action? What's the content like?
Yeah, so on the Love Nature channel, it's all natural history wildlife programming, so it's all live action. It's, you know, we produce, gosh, I don't know, like 50, 60 hours a year, I think, continually, and then have a pretty large library, like 500-600 hours of content. So a lot of programming to schedule. Zumu is a kids channel, so that's all animated, as well as with some puppets and a little live action as well.
Is it all library content, or are there plans also down the road to do originals? Especially for these services?
Right now it's all library. I think I entirely expect that at some point down the road it would be cost effective to produce only for these platforms, but right now the model's not there, at least for our content type. You know, I think I know there are others that are investing in original programming for those platforms, but we're not currently. But I could see us doing it down the road as the revenue from the platforms just continues to grow.
Greg Campanis is the Senior Vice President and General Manager of Omnia Media, and he's with us live from L.A. this hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. So I'm asking with you live from New York, the other side of the country, where it is 88 degrees at the top of the hour, quite humid. It's supposed to be a very, very humid week. This week ahead, and we're happy to have you with us at its start on this day after Father's Day 2020. If you have a question or comment on Many Minutes with Greg, make the call 646-652-2906. We got three episodes coming your way. This is number one. We're back on our regular time period midweek, Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. And joining us then will be Reset from this past Friday, Allison Greenberg Milton from Series Fest. She's the strategic officer of the annual TV festival out of Denver. Virtual for the first time. Next to last night happening tonight. SiriusFest.com is where you can go to find out the details of the panel sessions and how to see those 60-plus pilots that are in competition. Tomorrow night will be the award ceremony, and we'll then hear from Allison on Wednesday afternoon. And then later on, we will have one or two of the pilot winners on the program. And then this coming Friday, you will meet Quentin Lee. He is out to become the Aaron Spelling, the Ryan Murphy, the Greg Baranis, the Kenya Barris, or Shonda Rhimes of Asian American television. A lot of irons in the fire, including a website that he wants to turn into the Netflix of Asian American television. It's called www.asianamericanmovies.com. Quentin Lee, live exclusive with us. He just won the Roddenberry Impact Award. We'll find out that honor and how it's propelling his career. Quentin Lee, live with us, our lead guest, Friday exclusively on Tomorrow Talk Live. Don't miss it. I think you'll really enjoy what that man is up to. Greg, are there any other genres that both Omni and Blue Ant would like to develop as future programming services?
No, I mean, Omni is really focused on gaming, and that's where our focus lies. I think, you know, we focus on sort of a Gen Z millennial audience, which are just heavy gamers. And I mean, particularly with COVID, I mean, the amount of our viewership has increased, not only on YouTube and Snapchat, but also on the OTT services is kind of mind-boggling. For us, it actually offsets some of the CPM decreases too, which is kind of nice. So we're hopeful that, the interest in games is just going to continue to explode. We're happy to be there to help entertain and educate our gaming audience.
Uh-huh. One of the issues with esports and the gaming field has been the fact that women up to this point have not been a very big part of the programming or a very big part of the contestants, even though there are a lot more women, girls and women involved in esports. Are you doing anything in terms of trying to encourage the people that supply the content to feature women of color, people of color, in the programming?
Yeah, that's definitely a big priority for us. There's sort of two issues there that you're getting at. So we describe ourselves more as focused on gaming video content. You know, esports, which gets a lot of buzz, is kind of just a really tiny little piece of the bigger gaming content market. Gameplay content includes humor content, game culture, you know, guides, highlights, and esports. We did a study with Nielsen, and basically it's only about 10% of total game video content watching. So that being said, in the bigger gaming content market, you do see better splits between male-female viewership. It more gets down when you get to the nitty-gritty. Just certain games, for some reason, tend to be a little more male or than others. And obviously, gaming traditionally has had, I think, a bad reputation as it comes to gender. But it's actually a big priority for us to work with more female creators. We actually, our staff is pretty evenly split between male and female. Funny enough, like one of our big things right now is figuring out how to work with more creators that are of color. It's kind of a big priority for us, both from a writing perspective, but then also from a performance perspective as well.
Mm-hmm. Since you're clued into the gaming and esports world, we talked about scripted television before. There's also this movement by some of the mainstream programmers to adapt video games into television series, especially some in the fantasy, science fiction type thing. Showtime, for example, has been working for years about Halo. It looks like Halo will finally happen as a series 2021. There are some other video game projects, adaptations that are also in the works. What is the video game? I'm curious. What is the video? And we also have, by the way, some video game publishers like Activision Blizzard and Ubisoft who have been trying to put television shows together for quite some time. How do you see the video game industry reacting to the opportunity to adapt their games to television, to scripted series?
I think in the past, it's been a struggle, right? Because I don't think people in – I started in traditional television, right? So I worked at Comedy Central for a long time, and E before that. And generally speaking, I think the media industry doesn't get the games industry. I think that's starting to change because you see the success of, you know, all the big comic and Marvel movies and things like that, which is like kind of a, you know, a tangential audience to the gamer audience. So I think they're starting to get it more. At the end of the day, for content to work for gamers, it needs to feel authentic. And I think a lot of the problems with scripted stuff as it related to games in the past is it just didn't feel authentic or real as it relates to gamers or gamer culture. But I think you're going to start to see, and also separately, the game companies didn't really understand how to navigate the media industry, right? So they would hand over these brands and then, you know, they would just throw some writer at it and they would create something that no one in the audience was really interested in. And I think what you're seeing now is games themselves have become great scripted content, right? Like The Last of Us 2 just came out this past weekend. And it's just like the original Last of Us, it's, you know, really well written and it kind of really, really gets to you, right? So I think both sides are starting to understand a bit more of each other, which I think is hopefully going to come to a point where you're going to create scripted content off these great game platforms or game IP that the audience actually wants to watch.
As we wrap up, Greg, the final New Fronts Day, Friday, is going to be devoted for the first time to gaming and esports. What would you like the presenters and everyone involved on Friday, what do you want the message for advertisers to be about opportunities in gaming and esports services like yours?
Yeah, it's funny. Having done presentations to those agency folks before, it's education more than anything else. It's education on, you know, who these people are, that it's a valuable audience to reach. They're young, they make good money, they watch a lot of entertainment, but they're not watching traditional television. They're watching YouTube, Snapchat, OTT, and Twitch. And that if you want to reach them, those are the places you need to go, and you need to do it with an authentic message. So I think that's always the message I'm trying to portray, is that this is a massive audience you need to be, you know, they're a little harder to reach than you know, the normal audience I think advertisers are trying to go after.
Again, we want to remind you that the digital content New Fronts resume tomorrow morning. Snapchat and Facebook will be among the presenting companies on Tuesday. And for the first time on Friday, there will be a session dealing with gaming and esports. Also on Wednesday, for the first time, there'll be the majority of the presenters will be dealing in the world of audio and podcast, long overdue. For more details about the digital content New Fronts, you go to IAB.com, www.iab, short for Interactive Ad Bureau, that's the folks doing the event.com. And for more details on Greg's company and the various services it provides on smart TV sets and smart devices, and also the children's services available through Roku and the Roku channel. Here's where you go, www.omniamedia.co. That's www.omnia, O-M-N-I-A, media.co. Gaming, esports kids, and doing quite well with them, and hopefully a lot more excitement to come down the road. Greg Campanis, Senior Vice President, General Manager of Omnia, thank you so much for being with us. All the very best with your company, particularly this week in the wake of the New Fronts. And let's have you back soon to see how things progress from here.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Have a super week ahead, Greg. Take care. Greg Campanis, Senior Vice President and General Manager of Omni Media, joining us live from Los Angeles. One more time, let's give you our classic trivia question at the moment. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win A Very English Scandal by John Preston, the novel that inspired the award-winning miniseries from last year starring Hugh Grant. Who played Superboy on the 1980s syndicated series Superboy? Who played Superboy on the 1980s syndicated series Superboy? Again, the series ran four seasons from 1988 to 1992. I believe here in New York was on WNBC-TV, NBC station here in New York. And there were two people who played Superboy over the course of the run. We'll take either or both answers. If you first with the correct answer, you win the book. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And remember, we need to get the full address and also your full name so we can get the prize out to you as soon as possible. If you just missed the question and we don't get a winner by the end of tonight, we will post it first thing tomorrow morning on Facebook at Simon Applebaum and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. Before we go, a mere couple. We'll do that after we pause at the bottom of the hour. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tunein.com. Together reaching over 45 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget TuneIn Radio, your home for the Coronavirus News Channel, 24/7 pandemic coverage from all over the globe. That's the Coronavirus News Channel, TuneIn Radio at tunein.com. Well, before we leave you today, I want to thank all of our guests for just a dynamite episode coming on the heels of the first day of the digital content new front here in New York. For the second time in 2 months, we have a mea culpa to give you. And that mea culpa is about what didn't happen on Blog Talk Radio this past Friday afternoon. We had a great night episode in store for you that day, this past Friday. We had Allison Greenberg-Milk from Series Fest, the strategic officer. They had just started their annual festival, first time in the virtual realm from Denver, Colorado. We had Joan Feldman, the popular senior reporter for CNNnews.com, who covers tech and media, to talk to her about the digital content new front, the mega performing services, where things are at in the world of television. And we also had Stan E. Hubbard, the chief executive officer of the popular Reels channel, available on cable and satellite, who this past Saturday night debuted a very important documentary called American Crime, The Eric Garner Story. Our guests were all set to go for this 90 edition that is scheduled to run from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker and TuneIn Radio. And when we called in 15 minutes before to set up our line, we thought we had our line connection, and then we got a message from somebody on the phone. I'm sorry, but it's not working. You'll have to call back later or use the help desk and get help. We tried again and again and again. No line connection. If I don't get connected, our guests don't get connected. We got to the help desk, tried to get Blog Talk Radio to help us out. We contacted our guests, let them know something was up. We waited until a few minutes into the show to see if we could get on. We didn't. So for the second time in 2 months, we had to, because we couldn't get on the air to begin with, we had to cancel the episode. Simple as that. We gave our apologies by email to all of our guests. They were very understanding. We promised that we would reschedule them. We've already rescheduled Allison for our special episode Wednesday afternoon. We hope Joan will be with us either this coming Friday or next week. And we're working also on a situation with Stanley Hubbard from Meals Channel. This is the second time in 2 months that a technical breakdown on Blog Talk Radio's end resulted in not getting our show on the air when we're supposed to, which is different from what we've encountered in the past, where because of a sudden power surge, inclement weather, hurricane, something involving our internet service provider, Charter Communications, their Spectrum service, between you, me, or between me and both you and Blog Talk Radio, and not Blog Talk Radio's fault, we could not get on the air. Usually it's the case that we were on the air, and all of a sudden our guests can't be heard, you then can't hear me, show goes off, we have a reboot. That's different from what has happened twice now in the last 2 months, where because of a technical breakdown, clearly on Blog Talk Radio's end, we couldn't get on. The first situation 2 months ago, it was a case of we couldn't get connected at all. There was no phone on the other end of the line. We were told at the time afterward that there was a phone glitch, an issue with a phone supplier. Again, at BHRZN, they apologized, and they did the same thing at 5:30 on Friday afternoon. They apologized for the error. They said it had been resolved. It should be pointed out that there may be a mitigating circumstance to this Friday situation, because we've learned from Reels Channel that Stan E. Hubbard was supposed to be on another internet radio program earlier that Friday, and he couldn't get on, and the show couldn't get on. So there may have been a mitigating circumstance. And I'll give Blog Talk Radio and the other websites that may have been impacted by that the benefit of the doubt. But the important point that I want to leave with you is actually 2 points. Point number one, we apologize. I apologize on behalf of Blog Talk Radio. I apologize to you, our listeners. I apologize to our guests. And I apologize also to TuneIn Radio and Spreaker and iHeartRadio that we didn't have a show on Friday afternoon. And secondly, situation is unworkable. We cannot have this work. This cannot become a major circumstance because it raises issues about the credibility of our show and the credibility of this very organization. And believe me, credibility, whether it's in the world of covering television, the world of presenting radio, the world of doing podcasts, in any business world, credibility is very critical to the success of an organization. And when you lose it, it is very difficult to get it back. So all I want to say is, let's not have this happen again. Let's go forward and let's not have this happen again. And whatever Blog Talk Radio needs to do to correct this technical glitch so it doesn't happen again, do it. And I'll leave it there. Again, thank you to all of our guests for being here and all of you for tuning in. Appreciate your comments in the chat room, our call also earlier. Remember, coming up on Wednesday, we will have rescheduled from that Friday episode, Alison Greenberg Millis from Series Fest. And coming up on Friday, TV series creator and entrepreneur, Ben Lee, who's also working on what is now a website and may very well become the Netflix of Asian American television, www.asianamericanmovies.com. If you came in late on today's program and want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And check out our podcasts. They're available 24/7 over at iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker Podcast app, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio.com. According to the last two websites, that's TuneIn and iHeartRadio, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, then make the click, and you get an episode right then and there. Well, let's hear what you thought about today's episode. What's your thing about where TV stands halfway into 2020, and what's your hope for the second half of the year? And where do you think TV is going beyond 2020? Love to hear from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. Remember to try to get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. And we also would like you to get involved in a regular feature that we do called The Show to Know. Is there a TV program you like that you think should get more attention among the crowd that be? Well, we'd like to give it that attention. We've got to know what it is. So email me with all the information. And if we use your suggestion on the air, you will get the credit. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And don't forget, you can also find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's the UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, it's very important that you communicate with us and we communicate with you. We always appreciate what you have to say. Why? Because now more than ever, what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate at Blog Talk is Mandolin. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonberg, executive content producer and head of content. The co-founders of this enterprise, Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Show Rise was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a free trial run and three free audiobooks, it's audibletrial.com/televised. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening, and thanks to all of our guests. Have a great, great rest of your day and 24 hours and 48 hours ahead. We're back with you on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, at a regular time. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and the iRadio Podcast Network. And by the way, please thank Blog Talk Radio for the great editorial freedom they provide all of their hosts and producers. It's really well appreciated. Why? Because it shows trust and credibility in what we do to bring you the best talk radio and radio programming to you through this very popular website, blogtalkradio.com. And remember, whatever you're up to these days, please make it safe, please make it great, and let's lick this pandemic once and forever. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.